ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, executive producer Franco Sama talks about the magic of movie making. The Day One Band prepares for the worldwide release of their new EP, and Play Dead, by international best-selling author Harlan Coben, in our audiobook feature right after the news you want to know. Why am I in such a hurry? Always getting up too early. So fast everything is blurry. Oh, oh. It's like the clock is always racing, but my time is not for wasting. Someone else can do the chasing. Cause I'm chasing.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Let's start it off with a subject that's near and dear to my heart. Weird Al Yankovic released a new studio album last week. Has anybody heard it?
Oh, yeah.
It is awesome. Now, just to put it in perspective, I am a gigantic, humongous Weird Al fan. I've met him a number of times. I've seen him in concert 9 times. I have autograph memorabilia, so I'm a little bit biased.
Yeah, every time his name comes up, I see, like, rainbows shooting out your ears.
My eyes light up. And, oh, Weird Al. I love the guy. I can't help it. Growing up, he was one of the few things I was allowed to listen to until I reached high school when I discovered the rest of the world. But I just love Weird Al. I love his stuff. The new album, I've listened to it probably 20 times so far, all the way through.
The videos are hilarious.
The videos are great. So if you don't know, Weird Al was releasing one video a day for 8 days. And he had different directors and different styles on each of the videos. My favorite by far was the song Tacky, which is a parody of Happy by Pharrell, and it is great. He got Margaret Cho, Jack Black, Eric Stone Street, Kristen Schaal. They're all dancing and lip-syncing to his song, and it is by far one of the best videos of his I've seen in a long time.
And I love the Word Crimes because the parody of Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke featuring Pharrell.
And let's be honest, that song needed to be made fun of.
Totally. I mean,
it was bad to begin with.
Well, the Word Crimes. Hey.
I liked it.
Yeah, Word Crimes, I just thought was so funny because as an English major, I mean, I love those nuances of English. And there was one verse that he says, okay, you should hire some cunning linguist to help you distinguish what is proper English.
Yeah. All right, so some of the songs that are being parodied, like we said. So Pharrell's Happy, he made into Tacky. Another one that's been very popular is Lorde. She did a song called Royal, and Weird Al did a version called Foil, which starts off in his typical manner about food, because Weird Al does a lot of songs about food, but then digresses into shadow organizations and the Illuminati and wearing foil hats. It's very funny. Another one is Fancy by Iggy Azalea, and he does a one called Handy, and it's all about fixing stuff, which is really good. It's the first song on the album.
This is Weird Al's first number one album in his 31-year career.
That's right. The first time an album he's released has gone number one.
Yeah.
And it will probably be his last, too.
You know, speaking of number one albums, Maya's got a story about a band that really has a lot of number one albums.
Yeah, that's
more than
right.
One?
Kiss.
They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of
Fame. Yeah. There's a new update on what's going on for Gene Simmons because he has a new AMC show called Fourth and Loud. And basically, it's kind of chronicling their journey of forming an arena football team in LA. and arena football, I didn't realize this is a little different than...
Yeah, they play it indoors, and it's a smaller field.
Yeah, it's a 50-yard instead of a 100-yard field.
Uh-huh. Well, they're trying to promo the arena football. Like, I saw an interview, and it looked really interesting. He says, actually, that, quote, we're the Tiger Woods of golf. Before Tiger Woods, nobody cared about golf. And so he was saying that he wanted to do that for arena football.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it actually has created a little bit of controversy if you're a big fan of the X bandmates of Kiss, because in an interview, the topic ended up coming up of why Kiss didn't keep its original members.
Ace Frehley and Peter.
Yeah, Chris. The process they went through. And so what he was pointing out is that their ex-bandmates, they had major struggles with addiction. Mm-hmm. And it ended up not being very supportive for the group to try to deal with that. Well, he said, we love and respect those guys for what they did at the outset of the band, and they succumbed to the cliches of cliches, which is drugs and alcohol. Are you kidding me? If you're going to pass the ball to your teammate and they can't see where the goal is, they've got to leave.
Yeah, if there's one thing Gene Simmons is known for, it's his huge amounts of empathy for his fellow human beings.
Oh, yeah, oh, wait. Absolutely. Yeah, they got in the way of the opposite of that? Money, so they had to go.
Right, exactly.
Right. Yeah, because he said,
can't do it, forget it, pal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says,
we're not going to help you out.
Do you have a car? Do you ever get a flat tire? What do? The whole car stopped because one flat tire decided the car shouldn't run? Or did you just change the flat tire?
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
So he obviously put some new tires on that.
I guess. And do you know what's funny is that my vacuum cleaner wasn't working anymore. And I was like, honey, we got to get rid of this thing. It's broken. And he's like, actually, we're just going to change the bag. And then I was like, oh, okay. I was kind of ready to just throw the whole thing out.
That's funny. Well, you know, the thing I found interesting about this is, you know, the whole point of these interviews and stuff that he had was about the arena football team, right, that he's trying to promote. And I knew he was getting involved in that. It had been discussed recently. But, you know, John Bon Jovi is very involved in the Arena Football League as well. I believe he owns a team back in the New Jersey area.
Philadelphia Soul. You just took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say, I'm like, it's interesting how rock and roll stars get involved in this arena football.
Well, and what's his name? Who was the quarterback for the Denver Broncos? John Elway was involved with the Arena Football League at one point. Now I think he works for the Broncos organization, but I could really see a rivalry, you know, John Bon Jovi versus Kiss, you know what I mean? Like LA, East Coast, West Coast. Maybe we can get a whole like rap war type thing going here and get interest in the league.
Well, you know, Simmons says that he wants Tim Tebow to play on the LA Kiss.
Really?
Yeah, he said he wants to play in the LA Kiss because he has good values and doesn't torture dogs.
obviously referencing Michael Vick.
We could have that rap style war if they could only find people interested in watching arena football.
Oh. Hey, actually, I enjoy watching arena football. It's very fast paced. You know, it moves. They take a lot of the problems with the NFL, the slowness, and really weed a lot of that out. It's high scoring. It's actually kind of fun. It's almost like, you know, like trampoline basketball, you know, where they play on trampolines. You get that same kind of thing where things are just going all over the place. I like it.
Well,
like,
you should work for them, Jerry.
You could be an announcer for the Kiss Army.
Gene, give me a call. I'd be happy to help out.
But you know what? I was going to say something about Kiss. It's like, Yahoo's came out with a new thing that they're doing. 365 days, they're streaming live concerts, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Kiss was one of them, you know, in the first week. And I watched it just to watch it because we know Pamela Bowen, who was married to Paul Stanley, right?
Right.
And so I had an interest in it, and I watched it. And these guys are like in their 60s, right?
Yep.
And they wore, you know, the Paul Stanley, the lead singer, came out, and he wore, you know, the same thing he wore. And you would think like, okay, here comes an old man. He's going to, you know, there's no way he's going to do the, bare chested thing.
Yeah.
Well, he does.
Gene Simmons?
No,
oh, Paul Stanley. Yeah, the huge V cut.
Yeah, he does, man. And the guy's ripped.
He pulls it off. Yeah, absolutely.
He's in great shape. And the band sounded fantastic, man. It was it very rarely you see that because you see a band that ages and they still perform. McCartney, like one of them, you know, the Stones.
We talk about Crew, you know, Motley Crew, the same thing, how great they sound after 30 years.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the way they look. These guys were all in tip-top shape.
Yeah, well, and carrying on that point and also talking about how they replaced their bandmates, you know, the big attraction for Kiss, of course, is the makeup.
Yep.
And the costumes.
And the theatrics.
Right, so it would actually be easier to maybe replace a member of KISS, you just got to put somebody in the same makeup.
Yeah. Makeup. Yeah,
it's hard to notice.
Yeah,
the
they
difference.
Could go on forever.
We get a new cat and a new Starman every couple of years.
Exactly.
Yeah, James Bond, rock and roll.
Yeah.
Except for the gray chest hair.
Yeah.
Sexy.
That's
awesome.
It's
like Doctor Who. They just kind of morph into new KISS band members.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. They'll be running, be like KISS 2100. It'll be like Gene's grandson and Paul's grandson with two other guys.
Actually, Paul Stanley's son, Evan, he is a fantastic guitar player. He's better than his father.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well.
Carrying on the torch.
That's awesome.
So they were streaming the show, huh?
Yeah. Yahoo is doing a thing where every day of the week they are streaming a live show.
Now, are these arena shows? Are they more intimate? What kind of
this
are they?
Well, the KISS one was in a stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. But they're all big stars, and they're all in intimate settings. Some are in settings.
You know, I ask because you and I were having a conversation of there's a band you and I really like that we're talking about going to see in October.
The Pretty Reckless.
And we were talking about the size of arena show, like arena shows were huge in the 70s and 80s, you know, Queen selling out an arena. And it just made me wonder, like, with these shows that they're streaming, you know, are they arena shows? Are they like more intimate settings? Cyrus, we were talking about this the other day too.
Yeah, we were. And actually right now, Arena and Stadium Acts, they're saying that they could be gone within a decade.
Really?
Right. You know, Mark Mulligan, he's a music industry analyst, and also data from Spotify is pointing to a phenomenon called grazing, where the audience fails to yield a meaningful relationship with a single artist. Instead, people are going on and they're just listening to all kinds of stuff on the internet in a single playlist. They say an average person will listen to as many artists and have as many different genres and stuff that they would have had an entire year in a CD era. You know, it's just so easy to go out and download a song, buy one song off of iTunes from this guy and another from this guy, you know, 99 cents each. You don't go and you buy the whole CD for $15, $20.
Well, you know, the rule of thumb now is that Apple has effectively brought back the 45. That's what that's what their single songs are. That's what 45s were. You can buy the single song.
Yeah, you get the one song or maybe two.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to buy the whole album because, you know, I only like this one song.
Right.
Like a single.
It seems like these days we kind of have like ADD. Like, you start hearing one song and then you want to flip to the next one and then you want to flip to the next one. It's not where necessarily for the majority of people where they can drop in and listen to the whole album at once.
I saw something the other day. I don't remember if it was Spotify or Pandora, but it was something like 74% of people don't finish the songs they listen to.
Yeah.
Like, they just, they'll listen to 2 or 3 minutes and then they jump to the next one. And so it almost makes me wonder, you know, if the arena era is going to be dead, you know, you're not going to have Queens and Metallicas and Guns N' Roses filling out stadiums. If the live music is going to go the route of a playlist, essentially. So to fill an arena, you're going to have 7, 8, 9 bands all playing shorter sets.
Which ironically is what happened in the 60s and 50s, because when you went to a show, a rock and roll show in the 50s and 60s, there were several artists on the bill. You didn't just go to see Chuck Berry, or you didn't just go to see
Elvis.
You saw
the Big Bopper, Chuck Berry.
You would see them all just on the same show.
Well, that would be great. I would love that.
I would too.
And, you know, music festivals are big these days. It happens where they have, you know, a number of stages, a number of shows going on at once, and tons of different musical artists. And these days they're also streaming it online for people.
Right, exactly.
So when you think about how what's going on with that, they're tapping into the way that people like to see music live.
And I think, you know, like the article Cyrus was talking about, you know, the one underlining point that they're making is that, look, there really aren't any acts that are that big that there's, on the strength of their music and their presence
alone, they can fill an arena.
They're
going to
fill 100,000 people.
Right.
And they're going to stay for 3 hours. You've got the old acts like McCartney and the
Stones.
They
can do that.
They can still do that. But I can't really think of any big act that's out now.
Beyonce.
Well, you know what? That's she might.
Maybe.
Yeah, Beyonce. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but. Well, speaking of the catalogs and Beyonce, and I think Chrissy got a story that has something to do with Beyonce in there.
Well, yeah. She, there's the songwriter Linda Perry.
What's going on?
Hey.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey.
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
All right, so that was Linda Perry, right? Yeah. Blonde. Okay.
She's a songwriter, and she's written a lot of hits for, like, Christina Aguilera. She wrote Beautiful. She wrote Pink's Get the Party Started. And she wrote some Beyonce hits. But it's funny. She participated in this AMA, and somebody asked her, a fan asked her, if she was bothered that Beyonce changed a word on a song, and now she's getting writing credit. And Perry kind of laughed and said, well, that's not really songwriting, but some of these artists believe that if it wasn't for them, your song would never get out there. So they take a cut. And basically, there's like a little industry term. It's called write a word, take a third. And a lot of people do this. You know, they get the song from these writers. And a lot of them are like non-performing songwriters. Like, this is their job. And so they get the song and they change one little thing and then they become a songwriter and get a songwriting credit. So when the royalties all come in, they get the money for it, or they get some of the money for it.
Wow. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's been going on for a long time. I was researching this a little bit. In fact, Elvis Presley has a co-writing credit on the song Don't Be Cruel, even though he had heard a full demo of the song before he even recorded it. So, but...
That's like someone taking a Van Gogh painting and doing like a little extra swirl on it. And right. Like, oh, yeah, that, you know,
I made that with him. Yeah.
I made the frame. Right.
I'd say, but, you know, for me, if you were there while the song was being written and you're contributing, that's one thing. But if somebody delivers you a completed song and you go, oh, instead of saying fancy, let's say, you know, neat, that means you understand synonyms. That doesn't make you a songwriter.
Right. And that's what Linda was saying, basically. And, you know, but the thing is, you know, a lot of the times, I mean, a lot of the writers feel that, you know, listen, these very famous people are using my song. I mean, I'm getting money for it. I'm like, it's getting out there. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, you don't really know where to stand on it.
I mean, I guess as long as the money is not coming out of, if I were the songwriter and somebody, you know, Elvis is changing a word and now he's, you know, getting a third credit, as long as that's not money coming out of my pocket.
It is. It is money coming out of your pocket because of the songwriting credit, the way the royalties work, it's just whatever comes in, it goes to the songwriters.
Well, you know, Chrissy, you know, you're right. It is a double-edged sword because, you know what, if I'm a songwriter and that's all I do is write songs.
Right. Somebody's singing my song.
And I'm not famous. Right. And somebody like, you know, Elvis or Prince or somebody says, I want to record your song.
That song's going to get heard.
But instead of calling, let's get lazy, I wanted to say, let's get crazy.
Right.
Right.
And you're like, hey, that works for me. And I'm going to take a third of the money. That's fine because that's two-thirds now, that I wasn't going to get.
That's right. That's two-thirds of money I didn't have. And if you record it yourself, nobody's going to hear it.
And then they sell it to a commercial. And now all of a sudden these royalties are coming in like crazy because a lot of people do, you know, license their song to commercials.
Right.
So, I mean... Yeah, it sort of sucks because you would have had a third more money, but then...
You might not have had any money.
Yeah, you wouldn't have any money. Beyonce so it's a hit.
Yeah, and you know, most songwriters, you know, they would probably tell you, you know what, if somebody like, you know, Beyonce or Bruno Mars wants to record one of my songs, I'll give it to them just to get the notoriety.
Right, just to get your work out. Because that could lead to more work for you. You know, it's like, hey, I wrote this song and other people, write something for me now.
Right.
I write the songs that make the whole world sing. So.
That's a good point. Let's not forget that.
Yes.
So it was, I mean, she called it out on Beyonce, but I mean, I think this is sort of like an industry standard.
Well, you know, and I could totally see that. And again, you know, at least then somebody is hearing your work, you know, and I'm sure those same things apply to the other arts as well with cinema and books. And, you know, a very influential French theorist / writer / cinemateur is recently about to be honored. His name is, you may not know, his name is Alain Robbe-Grillet. He's French. And he was... I don't know how's the best way to describe it. He was very theoretical in his work. And he once said about his work that nowhere in all the world has anywhere been less interested in my work than in Britain. In Europe, it's...
Because he's French.
Because he's French, exactly. Now, his wife's name was Catherine, and she was oftentimes a collaborator of his. Over the course of the 50s and 60s, he released a number of, like, short experimental novels. He was really into... trying different things. And so he passed away, I think, in 2008. But in the UK, they're about to release think, 4 or 6 of his movies all together with commentary from his wife. And it's all designed to kind of expose people to a different style of cinema. He really upturned a lot of the conventions on narrative and closure, plot and structure. And his writings are going to be included with it. One of his best known projects was writing the script for Alain René's Last Year of Marianhood, which won the top prize at the Venice Film Festival in 1961. He was very well liked and known amongst his contemporaries. In fact, they had a tribute to him recently, and some of the people that came out in London to pay tribute were Olafur Eliasson, Dan Graham, Karsten Huller, Runa Islam, and Sarith Wynne Evans. Also, the French-born New York-based video artist Michael Otter was there, as well as French architect Philippe Rom, who basically said his novels were pure cinema, but his film works are extremely conventional, even if the subject matter is not. That was a quote from Rom. So they collaborated together in 2006 on for a show at the Canadian Center for Architecture. And a lot of people have interest in his theories and his work. And it's one of those guys that you probably don't know his name, but you've seen his influence everywhere.
Hmm. Fascinating.
Yeah. It is.
We'll have to check it out. Well, are there any releases in the U.S.?
Not that I'm aware of. Nope, it's this new release is, well, I mean, if it's available in the UK, it can probably be gotten from here as well. But it's the reason, one of the reasons it's a big deal is, again, because they did not seem to have any interest in his work there. And now suddenly he's hot again.
Yes, yeah, amazing how, like, posthumously people become famous. They're so ahead of their time that you don't know their genius when it hits you when he's there. And then years later, people notice it, you know?
Yeah, right. And interestingly enough, too, even though he was elected in 2004 to be a member of there's a 40-member Académie Française, excuse me, he was elected in 2004 to the prestigious 40-strong Académie Française, which is a French film.
Like the Academy Awards?
Like the Academy Awards for France, but he was never actually inducted. And the reason why, this is so funny, is because he refused to submit his speech in advance, and he wouldn't wear the robes of the office. So even when they wanted to honor him, he defied convention.
That's good.
Since we're on our international segment of the show, let's jump from France to Brazil. That's Maya, right. You had something about Brazil recently.
Their music is amazing. They have samba, and it's going on right now, a festival going on in New York City, all for Brazilian music. Oh. And it's called the Brazil Summer Fest. And it's a 9-day festival. It was supposed to be a day or two, but it turned out to be a week. And then it was growing so fast and getting popular, so they ended up making it that long. And it's really cool. Like, I love Portuguese, and and the Brazilian music has such a wide range of flavor. And there never really was a platform for the Brazilian musicians to be able to show their stuff here in the United States. And then this came along, and it's a great way to be able to show them. They're at Central Park Summer Stage, as well as some others. And this year's act ranges from Bebel Gilberto, who's the daughter of the bossa nova giant João Gilberto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, bossa nova, yeah.
Yeah. So it's cool to think that the daughter is now making music. I would be curious to hear that. She's going to be opening the festival it's actually a free show. And then there's going to be another one. One of the most intriguing acts I've heard of is Roge. He's a modern samba star, and he has kind of a surfer boy image, kind of like a Brazilian Jack Johnson.
Oh, okay. Right on. Yeah.
But he actually doesn't like that comparison. He says, our sounds have very different roots. I have a swing, a dance beat that he doesn't have. But, you know, having a beach lifestyle, being a beach character, I can see that we share a similar image, but I don't see it in the sound.
Yeah, you know what? Because it's funny. He's like, you know, don't compare me to Jack Johnson. He's on the Pacific Ocean. I'm on the Atlantic. Come on,
totally different. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny, too. I didn't know about this festival, but I actually saw a thing on Brazilian music. It was one of those things that was going on during the World Cup. And, you know, as you know, and a lot of people don't, they speak Portuguese in Brazil, even though the rest of South America generally speaks some version of Spanish. And their music was heavily influenced, not just by Europe, you know, with the conquistadors and that, but by Africa as well. And because of a lot of influx of African people into that area. And it was so weird because I just saw this and it was talking about the different influences that make their music and their food so wildly unique is because of this coming together of Europe and Africa and South America kind of all together. So it definitely is unique in
and
the world.
And very rich.
Yes.
Yeah. And that comes through not just in the music, but and in the food, in the styles, in the cultural kinds of expressions of creativity.
Down South America, you know, especially in Brazil.
Especially in Brazil.
So, it's so colorful. You know, you like the homes and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
All you got to do is see a painting of a Brazilian landscape and you'd be like, wow.
Well, yeah. And then look at like capoeira, you know, their dance fighting, you know, I mean, that there's nothing like that anywhere else in the world. You know, and that came out of necessity during the times when they were subjugated and they weren't allowed to teach their martial arts. You know, they converted it into this dancing form to go with this very unique music, but it was actually secretly a fighting style, you know, so that's why it looks, if you ever watch somebody do capoeira, it looks kind of like they're dancing, but then at the same time, it looks like a martial art. It's really,
that's what Cyrus was doing the other day,
And I think the Gracies are all from Brazil too, the winners of the first couple UFC championships. They have it's a fascinating country and huge too. It's very big.
Of course, they just had a World Cup there too.
Yep.
Yeah, and I guess this makes up for their loss. In the World Cup. No, they have this great music festival.
You mean they're shellacking in the World Cup?
Yeah, that was a horrible loss.
They took a beat down, man, but you know.
They lost 7-1 to Germany.
And then they lost the third place game.
Yep.
So they didn't even come into third place. Yeah. Poor guys.
Aren't
they going to have the Olympics though? Yeah, I believe they are.
They're having
the Olympics.
Oh, wow.
2016.
2016, that's soon, really? That's amazing. Yeah. Getting the World Cup and the Olympics in a 4-year stretch? That's crazy.
That's right. And their president is a woman.
So speaking of women, they have a woman president in Brazil. Cyrus, you and I were talking the other day about one of my favorite actresses, an SNL alum who's really made a name for herself over the last year, Kristen Wiig. She's got something new coming up, doesn't she?
She does, yeah. Her and Bill Hader, former Saturday Night Live alumni, they're in a new indie film that has premiered at the Sundance Film Festival.
Ooh.
You know, what they're saying about this movie, and, you know, I watched the trailer, and it looked funny and cool, but the whole thing is it's the strength of the movie is on Hader and Wiig. Because it's kind of like a story you might have heard before. You know, you might have seen this movie before. Two siblings forced back into each other's lives. And like I said, it's an indie film. You know, it's a little more, you know, plot-driven, kind of slow, but by having the chemistry, and we've talked about this before, with two Saturday Night Live people, it really just brings the whole film to life, you know, and you can see it in the trailer when, you know, just the way they look at each other, there's like these little cues you might remember from watching Saturday Night Live. Yeah, it just makes the movie that much more interesting. So
is it a comedy or is it like a serious kind of role?
Well, it's a black comedy, and at times it's serious. Their lives, you know, I mean, they take a serious tint to it. They're not just, I mean, he's a depressed, failed actor. Hader is, you know, Wiggs.
In real life or on? No, I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah,
I'm so just teasing. He's great. I love him.
Yeah, that might help him act a little bit better, being able to bring his real life into the role.
Yeah, right?
Well, I think
he's a method actor.
I think you really hit it on the head, though. You know, the fact that they were on SNL together probably gives them an advantage with a material like this because, you know, SNL is such a shared experience. I've heard so many of people say, like, you just can't understand it unless you've done it. You know, it's such a hard and yet rewarding experience. And so I imagine that when you get two alum, especially that went through the same era, because SNL's changed over the years, I imagine that they really are able to you know, have those common shared experiences and draw on those when they're working together.
Yeah.
It's funny. I heard an interview with Bill Hader. He was on Marc Maron. August of 2013, he was talking about this movie that he did with Kristen Wiig back then. So it's a year later. They had already shot it and it was done.
It's just sitting in the can.
It's amazing how long these movies take to come out.
Right. Yeah. The Skeleton Twins. You know, another thing about this movie, you know, we've already kind of touched base on it. You know, if you've been watching this movie with two unknown actors in an indie film, I've been in that situation before. You don't know where the movie's going. It kind of has this dullness about it. But with Christine and Bill together, there's always that chance that
if things yeah, go sideways
just,
at any
just
moment.
Just like that, you know, they're just going to do something that's just going to, you know, yeah, blow your mind away.
Well, Kristen really proved, you know, that she can not only do comedy, but like with Bridesmaids, I wouldn't consider Bridesmaids a dark comedy by any stretch of the imagination, but she had a sort of sadness to her character throughout. Yeah. I can really see that translating into material like this. So I'm looking forward to it. I'll definitely watch it. I love indie films and I like both of them. So I'll definitely check it out when it comes by.
Well, I think about Kristen Wiig, she's very talented. And one of the things about Bridesmaids that is she wrote it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. She proved
she definitely had a co-writing credit.
Where are we going there again?
No, but that's true, though. She had a writing partner.
Yeah. Well, you know, again,
she
SNL.
It. She wrote it with Beyonce.
Yes, Beyonce, she wrote one line in that movie.
On SNL, you know, everyone on there is not just an actor, but they're also a writer. I mean, they have to be. You know, you have to be your own biggest advocate oftentimes. And, you know, the best material is probably going to be the stuff that you write for yourself. So, and that's, I mean, that there's a lot of that in comedy and, but not every comedy is that way. You know, I like sitcoms too. Mm. You know, anybody got any good sitcom information for me?
Two and a Half Men. I've heard, that's a good one.
Two and a Half Men?
Yeah, well, that's it's coming to a close. It's going to wrap up.
Really?
It's, no more winning?
Yeah.
No more winning.
They're doing their yes, 12th and final season. But don't worry, it's not going out, you know, with a slow cinder. It's going out with a bang. This is crazy. The character played by Ashton Kutcher, his name is Walden. He's having a sort of a existential crisis. So what he wants to do to add more meaning to his life is he wants to adopt a child, but it's difficult to adopt a child. It's difficult to adopt a child as a single straight man. So what he's going to do is propose marriage to the character played by John Cryer, and they are going to get fake gay married on the show to adopt a child. That is what they're going to do.
And are they
going to
name the child Charlie?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen is so glad he's not on the show anymore.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's crazy. It's going to be playing in places where marriage equality isn't available. So, you know, it will spark some controversy for sure. But they're hoping that they're doing it in such a way that it's, you know, it's making a positive statement. Like, hey, like, we could do this fake gay marriage. But that's an option now, too.
And I love that it's like it's so fabulous that it's now part of the dialogue in
right.
a national scene like that, where it can be a topic that people are able to poke fun at and
right.
Have dialogue about.
Right, because it can be a topic now and no one takes offense to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's not that threat of violence either, too. You know?
Well, mark my words, there will be blowback from this.
Oh, of course.
And I'll tell you what. You know, it's like, okay, you look at Modern Family, you've got, you know, a gay couple that adopted a kid, and nobody says boo for the most part. But I think the fact that this is that it's a fake gay marriage just to adopt a kid, I guarantee there's going to be somebody up in arms.
I still think
it's going to be funny, but somebody will.
I don't think so. Because you know what?
You don't think so?
No. Adam Sandler did a big movie about the same sort of situation.
True.
Where, what was the name of that movie? Something like Larry or something.
I
Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, right?
Right.
There's two big movie stars.
And that was about getting health coverage.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they pretended to be a gay couple and they went to Canada to get married.
Right.
It wasn't legal in the U.S. yet.
Right.
And there was no blowback from it.
Good point.
You know,
good
and
point.
One of the reasons there's no blowback from it is because, you know, Adam Sandler is such a big star. And so the same thing with Ashton Kutcher and John Cryer.
Right.
The show's so big. It's got such a huge following. I don't think anybody's going to, you know, like, you know.
They're not going to, yeah. Yeah, it's a
except
good point.
Maybe
the only person who's going to rant about it is going to be Charlie Sheen.
Or I bet you there are going to be some neighborhoods in Alabama that aren't going to be so fond of it.
But we're used to that anyway, so. Yeah.
Do you remember that movie Green Card? Where she married the French guy because she wanted to keep her apartment and he wanted a green card.
Right, right.
It's like the same sort of thing. They're just like rehashing it with new stuff. It's funny. It's like nothing is new. Everything is old is new again kind of thing.
Well, another show, Booze and Buddies, right? I mean, that was
Buddies, right. They dressed up as
Tom Hanks and
Peter Scolari.
Peter Scolari, thank you. Exactly, yeah.
I love that show.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I do know what time it is. It's time to get the answers, everyone. And when I need to know, I go to Jerry Renfro, He knows. So listen up. Higher education is coming our way. Now I love it. And God bless America.
Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro. He knows.
That's right. I'm Jerry Renfro, and I'm in the know. You know, for children, there are two truly magical times of the year. Their birthday and Christmas. Both days are special because they mean presents. Yay, presents! Everybody likes presents, no matter how old you are. But kids can sometimes get so pumped for presents that they lose their ever-loving minds. If that happens, you can buy them a lovely straitjacket from Control Toys. I swear, I'm not making this up. A child-sized straitjacket that was, at one time, in this country, sold as a toy. Might still be. So this got me thinking, what toys seemed like a good idea at the time, but in retrospect, parents everywhere are mollified and possibly incarcerated for buying their children these really, really bad or inappropriate or downright dangerous toys. Let's take a look. First, do you remember the movie E.T.? It was kind of a big deal back in the 80s. I mean, for a time, it was the highest grossing movie of all time. High numbers at the box office usually equal lots of merchandising tie-ins. Perhaps you heard about the ill-fated E.T. game for the Atari 2600, the game that almost single-handedly brought down the juggernaut that was Atari of the early 80s. Yeah, it was that bad. I played it. You know, bad toys haven't just been in the recent era. Maybe you remember back in the 70s, the Pet Rock? Doctors everywhere would like to thank you for the houses that you bought by buying your children pet rocks. You remember when little Billy got angry and threw his stuffed rabbit across the room? No big deal, right? Well, when little Sally got mad and threw her pet rock, people ended up in stitches. Thanks. 2007 was a bad year for toys. First, the Easy Bake Oven, invented by Kenner in 1963 and now owned by Hasbro, had to have one version of the toy recalled because there were reports of at least 200 kids who had gotten a finger stuck in the toy and suffered everything from minor burns to one partial finger amputation. Hasbro recalled them, fixed the design, and continues to sell them, but hope you didn't get one that year. Also hope you didn't get Aquadots, a rather peculiar toy, but was very popular when it debuted. They were a bunch of colorful beads that you could arrange into designs, cover them with water, and they stick in that pattern. Fun, huh? Just don't eat them. It was discovered later that the glue used, when metabolized in a person's system, produced gamma-hydroxybutyric acid, also known as GHB, also known as, well, you know. GHB is actually a naturally occurring compound, but something in the glue led bodies to produce it when ingested. Unless your 7-year-old is headed to a rave, best to avoid the 2007 Aquadots. And finally, the king of all bad toy ideas, lawn darts. You think a bird finger or a bad acid trip is not good for a kid? Dying is probably not high on your list of desired reactions to a toy either. In case you didn't know, lawn darts are basically oversized version of regular darts that instead of throwing at a board, you try to land them in a bullseye circle on the other side of your lawn. So a giant metal dart designed to be thrown into the air and come down point first at a high rate of speed. What could possibly go wrong? From 1980 to 1988, over 6,000 people were sent to the ER, a lot of them under the age of 15. And the week they were officially banned, an 11-year-old girl was struck in the head and went into a coma. Wee. So parents, when deciding on your kid's next present, please try to avoid toys that make your kid look like a crazy person, toys that can leave your kid with acid flashbacks, and especially avoid the ones that will end up leaving you one family member short. And now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Every day is payday. Swipe my card, then I do the name. You're talking to a late day. I want a Kanye, yeah, not a Ray J. So that's a no-no. I'm a Maybach and use a Volvo. This convo beat like Dre, hey, I already know what you're trying to say.
Franco Sama helped produce Guns, Girls, and Gambling with an all-star cast that includes Christian Slater and Gary Oldman. He talks about this and more with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we are really, really excited about having Franco Sama on. He is a film producer and an independent film developer, and he is just a legend in the industry here. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Hey, doing all right. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You know, I watched your film last night, the Guns, Girls, and Gambling.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a great film.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, I read a review about it, you know, and the review had said that, you know, don't let the trailer fool you. This is a really good movie. You know, I was like, okay.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And you have some pretty big name actors in there with Gary Oldman and Christian Slater, Dane Cook.
Yep. Chris Kattan, Powers Booth.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah, it's definitely a great cast for the type of budget. Absolutely.
So how'd you come about making that film?
Well, it was an interesting one because I do consider myself a film producer, but really, if you look at the majority of my credits, you'll see executive producer is my actual title on many of these films because as an executive producer, I'm responsible to either bring in some or all of the financing, or sometimes it's the distribution that I'm bringing to the table, which also comes with a chunk of change, you know, as a contribution towards the film. And that was the case in that I do both. I executive produce some films and I actually produce others. And the ones that I produce, I'm a lot more hands-on and I'm involved in the entire process from the very beginning, from the development all the way through to the other end. In the case of the Guns, Girls, and Gambling film, it was kind of a fluke because I got a call from the main producers. They were actually in production when they called me, and they were looking for some additional funds. They were fully funded. It wasn't that they needed any additional funding, but, you know, sometimes you get into a situation where you want to not have to bring in certain investment money for whatever reason, and that it may be easier to go outside of the distribution model or whatever the case may be to bring in financing. So they called me and asked me if I could come in with an investor for a certain amount of money. And it was an interesting deal because sometimes these deals take months and sometimes they take years. But in this case, this all happened within the course of a week.
Wow.
Between when I got the phone call and when they actually got the funding in place. So I had an investor who was interested in, you know, getting involved in film on a smaller level as opposed to millions, you know, up front. And it turned out that he had a beautiful young daughter who was interested in being an actress, and she was an actress, and she had a little bit of a head start. She had done a short film or two. So we worked out a situation where she could get a couple of lines. She's actually in the movie, you know, in a scene with Christian Slater.
Okay.
Which was great for her and her, you know, her acting reel. And it's very common to do this kind of thing as long as the talent is legitimately good. And as a result, we were able to get her in the movie and put a deal together, and everybody walked away happy.
Yeah, it was a very entertaining movie. And, you know, I like Christian Slater. He just, there's a reason he's a movie star, you know?
He is. And, you know, he's a little underrated. He was actually very good in this film. He, as you saw, he carried the lead quite well. He's in the entire film, which is not, you know, not always an easy task. So the whole film revolved around him and his character. And it's meant to be a sort of a dark comedy, you know, so it's not the movie. What I love about the film is it doesn't take itself too seriously, especially with Gary Oldman playing, an Elvis impersonator.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think everybody did an outstanding job. The director, whose name is Michael Winnick, he's responsible for everything you see on screen. He was really instrumental in bringing that cast together in the first place and making, you know, what I think is a really cool movie.
Now, speaking of Christian Slater, did he do his own stunts?
Honestly, can't answer that. I don't know. Again, as an EP on this one, I wasn't there on set. I was sort of here in L.A. in my office, you know, pulling strings and putting deals together.
Well, I was going to say, because, you know, in the movie, man, it seems like he's taking quite a beating in the entire movie.
Yeah, no, he definitely takes a beating. And most of what you see is real in that respect. But I don't know if there was a few instances where he may have had a stunt person, but he definitely takes a few blows in that film. No question about it.
He sure does. And Dane Cook, I liked his character as well.
Well, also, Dane Cook is paired with Sam Trammell. I don't know if you know who he is. Sam Trammell plays a character named Sam on the television show True Blood.
Oh, okay. You know, we had Don Swayze on, Patrick Swayze's brother, not too long back ago, and he's one of the characters on True Blood, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's cool. Yeah, Sam has been a staple on that show from the very first season, and we were lucky enough to get him as part of this. So in the movie, he and Dane Cook are both the sheriff. they couldn't pick a sheriff, so they both were the sheriff in the film. And, it was a little bit of comic relief they added to the equation. It was nice to see Sam play that comic relief. You expect it from Dane Cook, but right. You don't necessarily expect it from him. And then Powers Booth was also in the film. He's a lot of the younger people now know him from Nashville, which he's not in the show anymore, but he played the dad, in Nashville for the first couple seasons. So he's a pretty recognizable face, and he was also really awesome in the film. So it was a really great cast. They came together to do a fun little film.
Yeah, what I was looking here, and there's another film, and I haven't seen it yet, and it's from your company, and it's called Black Limousine.
Yeah, Black Limousine, it was interesting because the original title for that movie was called The Land of the Astronauts.
Really?
And The Land of the Astronauts. And if you see the film, you'll see why, because there's a movie within the movie that's called The Land of the Astronauts. So that was the original title. I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure the distribution company was the one who actually changed the name of the film. They changed the title. I think that they thought that they had a better chance at selling it as Black Limousine as opposed to The Land of the Astronauts. I don't really know. Again, at some point, now I actually did produce that film, but at some point, once the distribution takes over and the ball starts to roll, a lot of times it kind of has a life of its own. You don't necessarily have a whole lot of control over what happens to it. But that film was a lot of fun. We shot it right here in Los Angeles. We had David Arquette play the lead. And interesting about that is that we had David attached to the film, and we had a date set up to start first day of principal photography. And if I remember correctly, David ended up with some opportunity to direct a television show, and he didn't want to pass up the opportunity. So we were in a position where we could have replaced him and shot the film on schedule, or we could have gone out and looked for somebody else to play that role. But the director and the other producers and myself all agreed that we didn't think anybody could play that role as well as David, and that he was worth the wait. So we ended up extending production by about 3 months before we started so that we could accommodate his schedule. And another person, Vivica Fox, is in that film. She came in and played a small little cameo role. And Bijou Phillips,
she's turned out to be quite the actress.
Yeah, and she does quite a good job in this movie. She kind of takes over the film, and in a really good way, she plays David Arquette's love interest in the film, and there's quite a twist at the end of this movie. So
when I first heard about Bijou Phillips, it was I bought her a record that she put out, and she's a very good singer and songwriter.
Well, look at her bloodline,
Right.
She comes from a very famous family of extraordinary performers and singers, and her sister, of course, is Mackenzie and China, and then her mom's the Mamas and the Puppers, so she comes from a long line of that. Another person that I think is worth mentioning in that film is one of my favorite, not only my favorite actresses of all time, but one of my dearest friends in the world. Her name is Lynn Shay. She plays the landlady in that film. And Lynn is most known for her role as the little old lady in There's Something About Mary.
Oh, okay.
The little next door neighbor.
Right.
With the famous suntan. So that's Lynn, and she's a good friend of mine, and I wanted to work with her so badly. We went through some hoops to get her in the film, and I was so grateful that she did it. Since then, she's gone on, of course, to be in all of the – she's in the both of the last two Insidious movies, and she's, I believe, gearing up to do even a third one. So she's an amazing actress. She's been around for a very long time, and she's so good at what she does, whether it's comedy or straight drama. And so she was another person that was a lot of fun to work with on that film.
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking here on your side, and you've got some, quite a few films that you guys are working on now. Dark Habits, Lost Angel, Top Fuel, Seance.
Yeah, I think I have about 8 or 10 films in development. And you know, I think it's important, again, to get, as an executive producer, one of the advantages to being an EP is that I don't have to be there on set during the filming. So I can be making 3 or 4 films at the same time, because I don't physically have to be there. So I can set up a project and get it funded and get the distribution in and do the lead casting first and get the producers and the director off and running. And then once they're on set, for example, I have a movie shooting in Mississippi. It's called The Livingston Gardener, and it shoots in Mississippi. It begins principal photography. It's in pre-production right now, and they begin shooting, but I won't be there for that. You know, I may pop in for a day or two to say hello and to meet everybody. But most of what I do is done from here, from my office, packaging the film. We have a great actor. His name is James Kyson. He played the character Ando on the hit television show Heroes.
Okay.
So, you know, he's got a little bit of a fan base. He's got a giant sci-fi fan base, you know, shows up at all the Comic-Con events and does that kind of thing. So that's one of the ones we have in development. And then I have another movie called Seance, which I own the rights to, which I have a great director attached to. We're in the process of raising the financing right now, and we're planning on shooting that in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, sometime around the beginning of next year.
Well, I wish you, like I said, continued success, and I recommend to everyone out there listening that they watch Guns, Girls, and Gambling. I watched it. I got it on Amazon.
Great. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I streamed it on Amazon, and you know, hey, all the best to you, and we hope to talk to you soon when your book comes out.
Sounds great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Franco.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye now.
To learn more about Franco Sama, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, 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 bass. Yeah, it's pretty clear, I ain't no size 2, but I can shake it, like I'm supposed to do. Cause I got that boom, boom, that all the boys chase, and all the right junk in all the right places.
The Day One Band's music grows organically from their home in Oklahoma. Their new song, Squares, has them blossoming on the world stage. They share the good news with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton, in this interview.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we have the band Day One on from Oklahoma.
How's it going, man? It's Lucius Callstone, man.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, it's Jim D, man, checking in. What's going on?
Hey, well, we're calling you from Pacific Northwest, and we love your music out here in Oregon. And for all of our listening audience all around the world here, we're talking to Day One, and they are just a fantastic new band out of Oklahoma. And they've had a song that intrigued us so much that we decided to reach out to them. And the first song I heard was Squares. And let's hear a little bit of that right now.
I don't know, I don't care, I'll be there everywhere. Coming up in my circle, we don't ever hang with squares.
How do you guys come up with your sound?
Basically, man, it's organically grown, man. There's no set format. It's a style that can't be duplicated or replicated in any way, because it just comes from both of our souls, man. You know, we're two people from completely different spectrums, man, but we've grown up together, we've been raised together, and we just mesh that and have an organic sound, man, something that's really original.
And you know what? It really is original. And you know, reading some of your reviews, you know, you're getting compared to Jay-Z. You know, that's fantastic. And you know, dude, I got to tell you, man, both of you have incredible voices. And you're right; they're very just, you know, distinctly different.
Right. Well, I grew up here in Oklahoma, and Chris is from Alabama and the Georgia area. So
we kind of took both of those influences of kind of where we're from. You know, I grew up more around like bluegrass and like classic rock type stuff. And
I definitely grew up with a hard hip hop, man, Tupac and 36 Mafia and things like that, man.
So yeah, we just combined both of our influences together and that's what comes out. And each album, you know, varies from sound to sound, but we try to keep both of our influences in the songs, definitely.
So. Yeah, I can agree with that now.
Yeah, well, you know what? Like I said before, you know, we love your music, and, you know, I know you guys got a nice following, and we really want to see you out here in the Pacific Northwest. It would be great if you guys could go on tour.
We definitely appreciate that, man. We need all the support we can get, man. You know, it takes a village to raise a child, man, and right now, day one's a baby, man. So we definitely need your support out there, man, in Oregon, and hopefully, man, we can make our way out there and do a show soon, man. We'd love to perform for you guys, man.
We'd love to have you, you know what, and we'd love to have you come into our studios too, you know, and we could set you up and you guys could do some, play some music live in our studio, and that would be great.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, we have very nice state-of-the-art studios, and we talked to different musicians from all around the world that have different styles of music, and when we heard your music, it's just like, these guys have something original going on, which is very unusual because everybody tries to follow a mold, it seems like, you know, like, I want to sound like this, or I want to sound like that. But you guys sound like yourselves, which is unique, and it's just really, and the music is so good.
So we just like to make music that we like to listen to, you know?
Yeah, we never believed in reinventing the wheel, man. We never believe in that. Like, you know, there's enough of that going on, man. We want to be innovators of this time, you know, because our generation, man, we need something to hold on to, man, and definitely, day one definitely wants to be that, man.
Well, you know what? You guys are really good, you know, and your videos, I suggest strongly that people will watch a couple of your videos. Squares is good, but I like We're Not Alone is really, really good one. And do you guys do all the writing yourselves, or how does that work?
100% comes out of our mouths, out of our hands. We do the writing, we do the recording, we do the engineering. Everything is organic, man. It's from the heart, man. We do all of that stuff, man. There's no extra parties. It's just Jim D and Lucas Coldstone, man. It's just us, man.
Wow, what an accomplishment. Well, tell everybody out in the, you know, in our listening audience, where can they find you? I know that your website is www.dayoneband.com, but you're also all over the place, are you not?
Yes, sir, man. We're on iTunes. We're also on Spotify.
And there's links to all of our sites if you go to dayoneband.com, Spotify, iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, all of that. Our handle for all of those sites is Day One Music. That's DAY, the number one music.
And the website is www.dayoneband.com.
Okay, I see you guys are on SoundCloud too. I got to tell you, SoundCloud is one of my personal favorites. I really like SoundCloud.
Hey, man, stay tuned in to that SoundCloud, man. We're getting ready to drop something brand new, man. And, you know, if you think Squares shook you up, man, you haven't heard anything, man. We're just getting started. We're getting ready to drop a bomb, man. Trust me.
All right. We look forward to that. You know what? I'm so glad I brought that up. Do you find you get a lot of exposure from SoundCloud?
Yeah, man. We get a lot of exposure, man. Actually, right now, our biggest thing that's pulling us in the most, man, is overseas, like in France, man. Shout out to everybody out there in France, man, that's showing Day One love. But Spotify, man, it's doing us really well right now, man. You know, it's something new, just like us. So Spotify is pulling us in a lot, man. But we're definitely getting ready to boost up that SoundCloud a whole lot and do a couple of SoundCloud exclusives.
Okay, and you're also on Facebook, of course, and YouTube. And you were speaking about France. Now, we have a big audience in France. And they seem to have, like, a keen awareness of who's hot and who's not, you know?
Man, we believe that foreign cultures, man, or things that are foreign to us, man, they just seem to sniff it out better, man, right? Well, right now, you know, they just seem like they're just, you know, a little bit ahead of time, man. That's all. There's nothing wrong with that.
Europe is really very, very cool, and I have a lot of friends over there. So what's up next for Day One?
We're fixing to drop a brand new EP. It's going to be a self-titled EP.
Day One.
7 tracks on it, and that's going to be available at our website as well as SoundCloud. And, yeah, we're going to get that out to the world. So that'll be our next big thing. We're going to tour to promote the album and get the wheels rolling.
Nice.
Definitely, man. For anybody out there listening, if you get a chance to see a Day One show, man, definitely come out to check us out anywhere in your city, state, town. wherever. Just stay posted on that website. And if you see a day one show, it's guaranteed to change your life, man.
Yeah, you know what? We were just out there for a festival for audiobook industry in Kansas, and that's not too far from Oklahoma.
Yeah, definitely, man. You know, we post a lot of our show dates on Twitter. So if you can catch us on Twitter, man, you know, we just shoot that out really quick. At Day One Music, we definitely keep a lot of our shows posted on Twitter. And it's getting ready to be a flood of shows coming, man. So just stay peeled and stay prepared for that. And if you guys are even in Kansas, man, hey, you know, we're just a couple of steps over. So really come out and see us, man.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Now, you know what? For our listening audience out there, why don't you walk us through an experience at a Day One concert?
Well, a Day One concert, man, we definitely have a funky intro, man. And when you're on the website, it's something for your ears. But when you come see us live, man, it's something for your eyes, man.
It's a really high energy show. We tend to go kind of crazy on stage. Can't help it. You know, it's just bringing the songs to life is what we're trying to do. So.
It's a really strong light show. You know, smoke machines, man, couple of incense here and there. You know what I mean? We definitely try to set a vibe, man. We bring the Day One vibe with us, man.
Well, you know, we just, you know, we love your music. And real quickly, I wanted to ask you about the song, We Are Not Alone. Because, you know, the video, when you're describing your concerts, you know, high energy and it's a visual thing. Well, you know, the video that accompanies the song, We Are Not Alone, is really very, very cool, man. And it's kind of out there. You know, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, we're definitely not alone, man. The video, man, the video is shot at a really exclusive location, man. We like to match the locations with the vibe of the song, man. The song was a really chill song, really vibey song, man. A lot of water, a lot of beautiful colors, bright colors. And basically that song came about. Logan had a strong chorus and a strong riff that he had, man. And I heard it and I was just like, oh my gosh, man. It melted my mind, man, as soon as I heard it. And after that, man, we just proceeded, man, to make another hit, man.
You know what? It is a hit, and I love it. You know, and matter of fact, let's hear a little bit of it right now.
Surrender my hands. Well, maybe it's my time for me to do my dance. Put me up in the trance. Nah, they never gave me a chance. I kept faith all in advance. I really, really don't understand how I'm so low on friends and how they so big on ends. I guess that's the way it spins. It depends if you win. Tell me when. I don't know. I never been here before. Dear Lord, let me grow. I so appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, that is just like, you know, unbelievable, phenomenal, man. I mean, and if you guys say that, we're going to get even more blown away by your new EP, man. I can't wait for it to come out. Now, when it drops, you guys have to come back on the show and tell us all about it, man.
Oh, man, we'll give you an exclusive interview, man. We would love to talk to you.
Oh, you got it, 100%.
No, we'll let you break out a song, man. We'll send you a new track, man, and let you blow the listener's mind, man. Why not? You've been supporting us this far.
All right. Sounds good to me. Hey, you know what? It's been great speaking with you guys and the band since Day One. And I really suggest everybody go out there and check out their music. You know what? If there's anything like any of us out here in the Pacific Northwest, once we just heard a few riffs from, you know, Squares, it's just like, boom, we're fans, you know?
yeah, man. We love you guys too, man. We appreciate that, man. Just stay on the Day One ship, man, and keep rocking with us, man. You guys will definitely have a jump on the world, man. You guys definitely have one leg up on the culture right now following us.
All right, man, you got it. And we will do that. And have a great evening.
To learn more about the Day One Band, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Saturday morning, jumped out of bed and put on my best suit. Got in my car and raced like a jet all the way to you. Knocked on your door with heart.
Play Dead. Theirs was a marriage made in tabloid heaven, but no sooner had supermodel Laura Ayers and Celtic star David Baskin said, "I do," than tragedy struck. While honeymooning on Australia's Great Barrier Reef, David went out for a swim and never returned. Now widowed and grieving, Laura has a thousand questions and no answers. Her search for the truth will draw her into a web of lies and deception that stretches back 30 years, while on the court at the Boston Garden, a rookie phenom makes his spectacular debut.
If you think it's best, I do. Just wait out here, okay? She nodded mechanically, her eyes wet and glassy. TC got out of the car and walked down the path. His head was down, his eyes finding the weeds popping through the cracks in the worn cement. He raised his line of vision and stared at the building. It was old, the paint chipped, the structure looking as if a good push would topple it over. TC wondered if it was age or the climate of the tropics that made the wood look so weathered. Probably both. The front door was open. TC leaned his head through the frame. "May I come in?" he asked. The Australian accent was the first TC had heard since landing. "You Inspector Conroy?" "That's right." "Graham Rowe," the man said, standing. "I'm sheriff of this town." While his words were those of a sheriff in a cheap western, his accent and size were not. Graham Rowe was huge, a mountain of a man who looked like Grizzly Adams or some professional wrestler. A gray-blonde beard captured his entire face, his hazel eyes serious and piercing. His green uniform with shorts made him resemble an overgrown Boy Scout, but TC wasn't suicidal, so he kept that thought to himself. A bushwhacker hat with its right side tilted up rested on his head. A rather large gun and an equally large knife adorned his belt. His skin was leathery and lined, but not aged. TC guessed him to be in his mid-40s. "Call me Graham," he said, extending a giant hand/paw. TC shook it. It was like shaking hands with a catcher's mitt. "They call me TC." "You must be tired after that long flight, TC." "I slept on the plane," he said. "What can you tell me about your investigation?" "Kind of anxious, huh?" "He's my best friend." Graham moved back behind his desk and beckoned TC to take a seat. The room was bare except for a twirling fan and the many rifles hung on the walls. A small holding cell was in the left-hand corner. "Not much, really," the sheriff began. "David Baskin left a note for his wife saying he was going swimming and he hasn't been seen since."
Harlan Coben is the internationally best-selling author of more than 20 novels, including the number one New York Times bestsellers Stay Close, Livewire, Caught, Long Lost, and Hold Tight, as well as the Myron Bolitar series and, more recently, a series aimed at young adults featuring Myron's nephew, Mickey Bolitar. The winner of the Edgar, Seamus, and Anthony Awards, Coben lives in New Jersey.
Love that state.
For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It, Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio, Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Maya Seligman.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there. Babylon, if you feel like that's what you want.